So let me give a little bit of information on tonight's talk while we're waiting for the reading. Last week, I answered a question about superstition, and I gave you my opinions on that. And I just want to say that this one, in a way, can be like a bookend to that one, because both of these questions deal with things that often Buddhists will not talk about, you know, very often. It all depends on the type of Buddhist. But last week we discussed the, thank you, Evan. We discussed the, my opinion on things like astrology, tarot cards, things of that nature. And what I wanted to point out was that my own opinion is that those sort of things ought not to be followed in the sense that someone believes that those kind of fortunes can literally tell you your fate. And I gave you both scientific reasons for that and what I think are very mindfully clear reasons for it. However, that's not to say that certain tools like the I Ching could not be used effectively to help someone reveal something about themselves that might be subconscious. So I do think that sometimes when we look at those sort of sources, like tarot cards or the I Ching, I think that they could be a way to help us to maybe get to some stuff that's subconscious. But I would warn against using them as a sort of fortune or future-telling device. I think that it creates more problems and suffering for folks than it creates liberation. But all that being said, I'm going to present tonight's study as kind of a connection with that. So our reading tonight, which I didn't want to mess up, is by the rock band Golden Earring. And this was a song that was very famous, you may know it, called Radar Love. When she is lonely and the longing gets too much, she sends a cable coming in from above. Don't need no phone at all. I always try to find a quote from music in some way that relates to this subject. So the question is, was, you know, dear sensei, you know, what do you think of psychic powers? So psychic powers, that's the question that the reader wanted me to answer. So what I'm going to do to kind of get into this is start with the way that psychic powers have been, you know, portrayed in Buddhism. Now you have to understand, within the nearly 3,000 year lore, legend, and mythology of the Buddhist tradition, there's a lot of cultures, and there's a lot of cultural accretions that were put on to the Dharma in order that they might communicate more, I would think, clearly or creatively with the audiences that they were going into. And so you're going to find within the Buddhist tradition everything you want. So anything that has any kind of human contact, you're going to find it's in there. So people being able to read other people's minds, people being able to, carry themselves in some sort of astral body, ghosts, heaven and hells, and pure lands, and there's all kinds of stuff like this. And this sort of psychic power, which, you know, in science they use the acronym PSI, that those things were often spoken about within the classical Buddhist tradition. Now, that being said, does that mean that it's something that's central to the Dharma? I would say a definitive no, it is not. But rather, these are things that are recorded by folks over the millennia that some may have had to do directly with dharmic inspiration, and some may have been cultural accretions that were brought in from the culture that was beginning to integrate the Buddhist teachings. So you're going to find everything there. So that's kind of fun. However, I always like to start, which is the essence of my newest book, which is starting with a cosmic perspective, which means that I see science not as perfect, not as some sort of new religion, or as something that should be the master. I rather see science as the handmaiden or the partner or serving, if you will, wisdom. And to remember that science is knowledge, it is not wisdom. And that's a big difference. But I do think that in order for our spiritual traditions to have any kind of congruity, especially in the 21st century, they have to have a very clear scientific grounding. In other words, that whatever you're teaching should at least leave some room for inference and reference from something that we know about the universe through the tool of science. So, to that end, in science, you're going to find that there is room for this discussion. Now, you will find, of course, some scientists that are very materialistic and deterministic, which will outright deny any of these things, which really isn't science. And then you will find other very respected scientists who actually do open up the door for these things. So there are folks like Russell Tarp, Dean Radin, and Rupert Sheldrake. Those are three names that if you want to look them up, you'll see that there's a great deal of scientific study and research on these subjects. And that was Russell Targ, Dean Radin, and Rupert Sheldrake. Now there's lots of others too, and there are very famous scientists who maybe were famous in the quantum field or maybe in some other area, who also were very interested in this type of what they would call psychic research. So I want to kind of start from there. Now, what most of the scientific research in the literature seems to indicate is that they were the idea that somehow human beings have the capacity to experience and see beyond local residence. So local residence is a catchphrase that's used to say that our consciousness is located in this meat and bone body, and that's the only place it exists. If it exists at all, there are some materialists that believe that consciousness itself is not real. I find that to be an interesting point. But that being said, that's what local residence means, is that it's limited to this situation. A non-local residence is the idea that consciousness somehow is able to go beyond the local. And if you look up these fellows and you look into the research, you will find, I would not say conclusively or definitively, and actually I would say that's probably the case for a lot of science, especially theoretical aspects, even things that we hold dear like the Big Bang theory or the point of singularity. New research is showing us that that may not be completely correct. So, you know, It leaves the door open for very intelligent conversations about that. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, you're so open-minded that your brain falls out. It just means that you keep an open mind when looking at these subjects, which are fascinating. And if everybody admits it, they're really drawn to this stuff because everybody wants to know about it. I mean, that's why in the last talk, that sort of thing is so popular today. So they're mainly looking at the way in which humans might be able to communicate beyond this local residence. And so there's a lot of interesting research there. And I think that it's really important to, you know, keep your BS detector on when looking at things, but at the same time, be open to the possibility that consciousness is not something that is materialistically determined. My own approach to this is to use an analogy that for some, so let me use a little story to give you that. And I've used it in the book, I've used it many places. So many of you have heard this before. And that's the idea that, you know, there's this island somewhere out in the ocean, and it's a very primitive place where there's never had any exposure to any modern technology. And one day an airplane is flying over, which, you know, the primitive people see as some sort of silver bird. And an object falls out of the plane and lands on the beach. I don't know if you've ever seen the film, The Gods Must Be Crazy, but it's sort of that scenario, right? And so this radio lands, and it lands on a very soft part of the beach. And so it's still intact. And it's actually turned on. And so one of the fellows who's fishing that day hears this sound. He hears what, not that sound before. But he hears music and he hears it playing. And so he's trying to figure out, where is this sound coming from? What does this mean? And so he finally sees this object, this little radio. And this radio, in this parable, is playing music, and he lifts it up and he's wondering to himself, where is this music coming from? And he thinks it must be inside it. So he's a very sophisticated primitive person. So he figures out a way to take the screws off and take the radio apart. But when he does, it stops making music. So he, you know, frankly looks at it and says, well, there's nothing in there, but it still must have come from inside there somehow. So one view would be like to be little people in there playing that music. Well, he opens it up and sees there's not little people in there playing music, but the music is gone. So he assumes that the music was in that box. Now, we know that he'd be wrong. We know that what was really happening was, and this must have been a really strong radio, right? That it was picking up radio waves, which are invisible and are all about us, and picked up these radio waves. Or maybe I should update the story and make it, satellite waves. But it picks up these waves, right? And this transistor or the system is able to then embody the music that's coming through the airwaves. Yeah. And so it's very magical. But at the same time, we understand how the whole thing works. Now, if suddenly, you know, someone could beam to that island and explain it to this very intrepid, intelligent, primitive fellow, he would try to explain to them, well, look, you know, it's not really in there. There's no people in there. You kind of got that, right? But it's not in there. It comes from out there. It exists, and it's invisible. And if you have the right receptor, you can pick it up. Do you think you'd have an easy time understanding that? Maybe he believes in all kinds of invisible things, so it would be easy for him. But that's kind of where we're at. And so some humans kind of early on talked about the idea of a soul. Now, I don't mean this poetically, but I mean it literally. Like, you literally have this, like, other entity within you. And that when you die, this entity kind of goes somewhere else. Or it stays put, or it comes back and takes over some other. And Buddhism has always challenged that notion that there was some kind of thing residing within you. It's like the radio, right? It's like the transistor radio that the people are inside. Buddhism has always questioned that and challenged that notion. So Buddhists like myself don't believe that there's something that exists inside me, a ghost in the machine, if you will. But that doesn't explain everything. So just because there's no people in the radio doesn't mean that the radio, when it's functioning, can't pick up invisible waves coming to the air. And so my own view and understanding, based on insights from the Buddhist tradition, is that consciousness, and also from the scientific literature that I have found, is that our consciousness doesn't reside within us. And that the whole notion of there being an inside and outside is something that is a very limited perception. And even our concepts of time and space are based on a kind of, as Einstein put it, a kind of mental myopia, a nearsightedness, not seeing the whole thing. And so for me, consciousness doesn't reside anywhere. And at best, a good explanation, a potential explanation that has come up, was put together by Sir Roger Penrose, probably the most brilliant physicist alive today. Is that we are like the transistors. And the different life forms are like different types of transistors. And he even has gotten so far as to theorize that it's the microtubules within the synaptic network, which, you know, us, and we share with us and animals and plants. And in fact, this experiment not too long ago proved that he was correct, that there is actually a quantum event occurring in, for example, a plant. When it converts sunlight into chlorophyll, there's a quantum event going on, and it happens in the microtubules of the plant. So it could be, and this is again an analogy, that we are like a transistor radio. We're picking up those waves that are invisible to us, but they're there always. You know, just like the light spectrum. You know, we can see a certain amount, but there's parts we can't see, like infrared. But that doesn't mean it's not there. And so from the Buddhist angle, you get a very different sense of this, that consciousness is something that doesn't reside, but rather it is something that is experienced by us. So when you understand that, it's not so hard to imagine that consciousness has a non-local resonance, because the local resonance is only part of the picture, just like radio waves are a non-local residence, and the radio was the local residence. So that's the kind of information I can take from science. Now, from my own personal experiences, as everyone knows, I am a very scientifically oriented fellow, and I'm a very deeply spiritual guy. Again, thinking that science should serve spirit. But I have had personal experiences in my career over the last 32 years, going on 33, that I have tried very hard to explain. And in several instances, it was not just me that had the experience. It was other people with me. And sometimes, you know, it's like Occam's razor. Sometimes the simplest answer is the correct one, even when it seems fantastic. But I can tell you that I've had many experiences personally that some would probably put under the label of the experience of some sort of psychic non-local resonance. And I do think there's something to the old Buddhist lore that says that the more a person practices meditation and mindfulness, the more that this consciousness becomes more finely tuned. And when that fine tuning occurs, then that person might experience things or might see things that other people wouldn't see. And again, I think you have to always go through and eliminate all the practical possibilities. But I have had several experiences, both myself and coming from outside of me, that I can't explain. I use that line from Golden Earring because that's one of the experiences I've had many times. Many times, and most recently. So my wife's here tonight, and so she would be the person sending me that radar look. But I can tell you that our beloved pet animal companion Basil had to go to the vets, and I was at home, and she had left, taken him to the vet, and I wondered how he was doing, and I went down to pick up my phone. And as I raised it up, she was calling. It was on silence. I hadn't seen my phone. It was on the charger. I picked it up, and as I picked it up into the air, call coming from Becky, just at that moment. That's a simple example. I've had that happen on so many occasions that I can't even remember all of them. So how do you explain that? And I've had experiences even where I had a premonition about something. One time, my wife and I, when my son was very little, we used to go to this lake to sort of just have recreation. And I got in the truck and we were driving from the farm we lived on to this lake. And I had a sudden image come to me that a deer was going to jump out in front of us. And so, again, I don't react to these things, but I said to my wife, I said, "Hey, I've had one of those things. What do you think we should do?" And she very wisely and rationally said, "Well, it could be something or it could not be, so why don't we just take our time and be very careful?" And I thought that was very, very sound. And so that's what we did. We took our time and went down to the lake, had a great time on the beach, and then we were driving back. And to be honest with you, I had kind of forgotten about that little premonition. But as we're driving back, there was a car in front of me. And as that car is going, I had a sense that something was going to happen. And a moment later, a deer jumped in front of that car, slamming into it. So that could be pure coincidence. And I'm open to that, man. But the truth is that I've had experiences like that on multiple occasions. And it gets harder as they start to pile up to just reject as coincidence. It's hard. And I won't go into, I've had plenty of experiences. In fact, I'm thinking about writing a book about those experiences. But the point I'm trying to make is that for me personally, while I always keep, sort of great doubt out there, I also have experienced these things that tell me, for me personally, that my consciousness, man, it sure ain't limited to this bag of bones. And so finally, I want to talk about that in terms of what it might mean theologically for us. So as you know, our main teaching is that all life is interdependent. So the way that that's often spoke about is that is oneness, the oneness of all life, and that awakening. A Buddha is someone who awakens to the oneness of all life and then acts out of that oneness. And that's kind of how I think about it. Theologically, is I think that because oneness is real, that nothing can separate us from this oneness. And nothing is truly separate. That idea of separation is that myopia. And that it really isn't the true story. And so in that oneness, in which nothing can separate us, and I would say not even death, there is the potential for the possibility of these experiences. And so whenever someone I care about is in trouble or having a difficult time, if there isn't something I can do practically for them in terms of, you know, something I can offer them, then the one thing that I do offer is I offer incense and prayer. And prayer for me, I always say, is a horizontal, not a vertical thing. I'm not praying to someone per se. What I'm really doing is I think of it this way, that somehow I'm sending out that radar love, that everything is one. And when I consciously create that intention and send it out, that radar love goes out across the wire. And I don't think that necessarily changes the karma or the consequence of that situation, but I know two things that it does for me. It makes me very aware of my oneness with those people. And it changes you. And it really gives you something that you can consciously do when there's nothing you can do physically. And I do believe that it makes a difference. So, in essence, to the questioner's query, yes, I personally believe that what we might call PSI or psychic reality is something that is, I think, potentially possible and real. And I think that I've experienced it. And I think that the Buddhist tradition, in many cases, was giving examples of that from other members of this community and practitioners over the years. So I hope that was useful.